time to tune in to the podcast with wise words, glasses on, ears open. Many things you learn from industry leaders and permobil experts. Welcome to the point of view of the wheelchair nerds. Extra, extra.
Be the hammer.
You're listening to something great.
I'm great.
You finally arrived at the place.
Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it.
Hey, Wheelchair Nerds, welcome back for our next episode. We took a couple of weeks of hiatus. You may or may not have noticed some of our folks who listen avidly and weekly, we appreciate you, but we did take a little bit of a fall break, if you will. We were busy doing a Harvest Hoopla event down in Nashville, which was a ton of fun. We'll tell you guys more about that at some other point. And also, we have another surprise recording that you guys are going to get to check out. We had Tara Shetterly, who is one of someone who uses a tie light chair. She lives in Virginia Beach. And then Catherine Sweeney, who's one of our clinical educators, they got together and did a webinar, and we did that, ProBuild co-hosted that with Spinergy, and we're going to bring that recording to you guys here soon, so you'll have another kind of bonus episode, if you will, that you guys can check out. So today's topic, well, let me tell you, we have one of our good friends back who's a colleague of ours, Jim Stevenson, and you know, if Jim's on the podcast talking, it's going to be about what I call the F word of our industry, funding. And since you've been a part of ProBuild for a little over a year, and you're really starting to meet a bunch of my clinician friends, I wanted to bring another clinician on here to talk with you and give that perspective of what's been happening. But tell you what, it's never a dull moment in Jim's world. And so today we're going to talk about some changes that happened in relation to approving folks for power wheelchairs or going through that 5-year power wheelchair process. And really what it means, even though it's something that came out of Medicare, what that means for everyone. And looking forward to the discussion, because I think it's going to be really beneficial for clinicians and end users who check out this podcast. And of course, our provider friends too. So Hawk, how's your world been since we've been doing a hiatus and whatnot?
Yeah, no, everything's been great. I had a chance to check out the Hoopla, the Harvest Hoopla as well. That was a super fun experience. And then you also see me through the webinar recording. I got to moderate that. We had some great questions come through for Tara and Catherine. And yeah, I'm looking forward to this episode as well with Tamara and Jim, just to discuss kind of the policy aspects and really how does it affect me as an end user? What can I expect? And then also for clinicians and providers as well, you know, kind of how to navigate this new space. And, you know, if we have time, maybe we can touch on some other changes that have happened recently and we had some good discussion about. So yeah, really looking forward to this one. So ready to jump in.
Awesome. So Jim, we'll let you go first. You've been on here a couple of times, but who are you? What do you do?
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me again. It has been a little while, but I definitely enjoy every opportunity I get to come spend some time with y'all. I'm the senior market access manager for ProMobil. I've been with ProMobil now for about 7.5 years and been around the CRT industry for, let's see, what will it be? It'll be 22 years in December. So I've been doing this for a pretty long time. And, you know, it's always kind of interesting when we, you know, get things that thrown at us that we weren't anticipating. And this thing about the reasonable useful lifetime replacement is one of those things. So I think this will be a good chat this morning and make sure that everybody has a good understanding of what that means and how to maneuver through these new changes.
Awesome. And then Tamara, gosh, you and I have known each other since 2012. I still remember the first place we met, which was a hotel in Denver, and not in a creepy way. It was for a clinician meeting for anybody who's curious.
Yeah, you sat across from me at dinner, I think I remember.
It's true. So it's been a while since Tamara and I have known each other. We've known each other since before I started at ProMobil. We both had life changes, job changes, if you will, since then. And now I work closely still with Tamara. I'm a member of the Clinician Task Force. And we've had a few other CTF members on the podcast, Tamara, but we've never had anybody who is sitting as a current executive director on the podcast. So I think it's important the reason why I say it that way is Kathy Carver was on last season, but that was post her CTF tenure. So as leadership, but I'd like for you, when you introduce yourself, to tell us who Tamara is as a person, as an OT, you know, your passion, obviously talk about Eleanor's project a little bit. And then towards the end, let us know, I'd love for folks to understand what the clinician task force is also.
Okay. Okay, great. I'd love to do that. Well, I'm an occupational therapist of 50 years, actually. So go ahead and do the math. I'm not as scared about people knowing my age. I've been part of the complex rehab technology world since the 1980s, although we didn't use that terminology then, but that is what we were doing. I had already been doing some equipment work. I specialized in pediatrics at the time, and I was working with a wonderful state-funded program called the Montana Adaptive Equipment Program. I lived in Montana at the time, where, looking back, we just provided an amazing level of services for people who lived all over that great big geographically diverse state. And then my youngest daughter was born with cerebral palsy and profound deafness, which was a big life change for me, moving from being a professional to also having that dual role of being her mother. And wasn't an easy transition. And I reached a point where I felt like I couldn't keep on doing what I was doing. I was doing some equipment, but I was also working with kids, you know, who needed to learn how to balance better on one foot and such, you know, which is great for able-bodied kids, but it was emotionally difficult for me to be working in that context. And I really enjoyed working with equipment, and I really determined that what I wanted to do was just work with the kind of gear that my daughter needed. So that's what I did. And the Montana Adaptive Equipment Program allowed me to just focus on that, specialize in that area. And I continued on with it for 16 years until the state of Montana cut the funding and I morphed into a private practice. So most of my career in CRT was very much community-based, in people's homes, in people's schools, in people's group homes, in their natural environment. And I'm really grateful for that experience. And also, because I lived in Montana and covered such a broad area, I began working with people when they were infants, toddlers, preschoolers. And by the time I left in 2022, I had clients who were in their 30s, and I had known them since they were tiny kids. And there are really some things that you learn when you work with people over decades like that. You learn more about them as people, their families, their environments. It really changed the way that I looked at things. You discover what happens to people's bodies over that period of time and how they change physically and their needs change. So I'll always be really grateful for that experience. And it was during that time in 2008 that I joined the clinician task force, which I'll describe in a minute. In 2001, my daughter passed on. She died early, just before her 12th birthday. And a couple of years later, I started a nonprofit called Eleanor's Project. And that is her legacy. And so since 2004, we have been involved internationally with complex rehab technology. And since 2012, a foundation of 24-hour posture care management. So we primarily work in Peru. And I'm very, very proud to say that our colleagues there are doing wonderful work. We've done a lot of training, a lot of mentoring. They have embraced 24-hour posture care management in an amazing way, so that it is the foundation of their whole wheelchair program, which just makes me so happy. It's pretty unusual to find places that do that. I know that my friend Leanne Hoffman has been here on the program, and we're co-conspirators in this way. So I'm very happy and proud about what's happening in Peru through Eleanor's Project. Getting back to the clinician task force, We are a group of occupational and physical therapists primarily. We have a handful of ATPs who are members also, but we're all people who are really concerned about best practice, advocacy. I'm really trying to make sure that our system gets better and meets people where they are, that people are able to get the equipment that they need. Many of us also have a concern with who are the younger people who are going to be coming along to fill our footsteps. I was lucky enough in Montana that in 2017, a wonderful younger OT came up to me and said, gee, I want to learn how to do what you do. And so when the time came for me that I needed to leave the state and move on, I had somebody that I knew I could trust and leave my people with. But some of our members are not in that situation. They tell me that they just can't imagine how they're going to be able to retire because they feel like there's nobody else who's going to be coming along to be able to take care of their clients. And they're really worried about that. So the CTF is not only concerned about advocating with Congress, with our state governments, our state legislatures, all kinds of different organizations, but we're also concerned about trying to bring in younger therapists, trying to work toward better education and mentoring, helping people gain the confidence that they need in order to be able to do proper complex rehab technology evaluations and give people the service that they deserve. Jim and I were talking about it a little bit before we came on air. And, you know, we all know that there are quite a few therapists out there who every once in a while they get asked to do a wheelchair evaluation. It's not something that they do routinely and feels overwhelming. And maybe they do it so infrequently that they lean too heavily on the supplier and, you know, ask the supplier what they should be getting. I know that this happens because I hear these stories. And so we really want to help people build up their skills so that they will feel confident in this area and be able to do a good job.
Absolutely. I'll definitely put a plug in for CTF. I've been on the CTF for a number of years now. And I think one of the things that I find quite often, even when I was in my clinical education role, Tamara, is that, you know, we'd be out there educating clinicians and they were excited to get their CEUs. And then really my aha moment was really transitioning to doing more events and really getting out there with my friends who use wheelchairs, just asking questions. I mean, I am Hawkins' boss technically, but he knows that I will ask him questions every once in a while, bounce off of him. We have a running joke that I literally had no idea when I first met him or saw his name that he was in a wheelchair. So that had nothing to do with him getting hired at Permobile, but he has been, I would say, not evaluated by, but verbally interviewed by Leanne about his 24-hour posture and learned a lot as far as like what a true clinician who understands seating and positioning really can bring to the table. And I think a lot of folks who listen to this podcast often ask us like, hey, where do we find a clinician that knows what they're doing? And so I always tell people like, go check out the Clinician Task Force webpage. If you're a clinician that's just getting out there, and you know, this happens so often where people say, I haven't worked in a hospital in years. That was the last time I had an in-service, or they don't even know that wheelchairs is a career that they can specialize in. So just, I mean, check out the website and clinicians that are listening to this. Even if you think to yourself, I can't commit to being on a committee, reach out to Tamara, just get to know the CTF. She's happy to link you with mentors. I mean, there are all sorts of other people that are out there that, it is not an elitist group at all. We are just a bunch of wheelchair nerds that are on the Clinician Task Force too. So there's my plug.
I'm really glad you spoke out to the clinicians who might be listening here too. You know, I can say that one of the big benefits for me in being part of the Montana Adaptive Equipment Program for the first few years I was doing this was that I did always have a built-in circle of people. If I was writing a letter of medical necessity and I wanted someone to look it over and see if I could make it better, there would be somebody that I could ask. And many people are out there now today feeling like they're on their own. And if you're a part of CTF, you do have a built-in circle of people who are going to understand and be interested. And I'd also like to say, we do not have people in every state. We have 11 states in the United States where we have no members. And we have a number of states, including a really big one, Haka in California, where you live, where we have only one member. And so, you know, if you are interested in looking into becoming a member of CTF, we are always looking for new folks. And particularly, we have members where we have absolute, or states where we have absolutely nobody. So be sure and get in touch with us.
And it's a free membership. Seriously, guys, it's free. There's really, you get to learn things, network with people. It is a win-win, quite honestly, Tamara, as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, that's our plug for CTF. But so you guys might be wondering, how did, you know, okay, we've got Tamara on here with a great experience. Jim, we know about funding. We teased that a little bit. Well, gosh, back in June, I think I stumbled upon an article in HME News. I'm like, huh, wonder what that's about. Luckily, with inside the walls of Permobile, I have Jim who can answer some of these questions. And I was finding out about, oh, we're going to do a webinar with the great folks at US Rehab. And Jim and another one of our colleagues at Permobile Ginger was going to be on there. And then I was on a CTF call and it came up. And it's been one of those things, this the world of funding and the world of policy changes at the blink of an eye these days. It's hard for us to really stay abreast of everything. And luckily, we've got some experts on here. So, Jim, can you talk a little bit about what changed in June and what was that impact that it might have?
Yeah, so basically what came about has to do with the reasonable, useful lifetime replacement of a wheelchair. As everybody knows, it's typically 5 years. But the other thing I think that's important for people to note is that just because 5 years comes and passes, that's not necessarily a license to hunt. I mean, if somebody's existing equipment is still, you know, meeting their needs and whatnot, doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to just get a new chair every 5 years. And I think that that's important for people to understand. I mean, for the most part, if you have needs, you're going to get your chair after 5 years. But, you know, just because, you know, 5 years is up and you think you're ready for a new chair, if your new one's still, or your existing one's still satisfying your needs, it's, you know, it's money that doesn't necessarily need to be spent until the time comes. But basically what happened in June is they came out and announced that if you qualified for a power wheelchair through Medicare, that when 5 years comes around for a replacement, that you don't have to go through all the typical processes and protocols, like no face-to-face. You know, that really the only two things that need to be submitted in this thing, according to, you know, Medicare, is just a prescription and continued need. I mean, there's no real clinical information based on the way that they've, you know, put out this article. You know, obviously that creates a little bit of challenge for some of the folks that we deal with in the complex rehab industry, because the folks we deal with, I mean, over 5 years worth of time, sure, their equipment might be, you know, functional and whatnot, but their needs may have changed. So, you know, there's some concerns here that, you know, people take the easy button and maybe not do the official evaluation, you know, making sure that all the needs are satisfied and considered and whatnot. You know, so I think it's just important for folks to know that this rule that came out is basically just talking about what needs to be submitted for prior authorization. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't still do that work. It just, when it comes time to submit for authorization, they're only looking for a few things. You don't need to re-justify the power wheelchair base. That's already been established. Now, if you're a Medicare client and you had a different insurance 5 years ago, and now you need to get a new chair, you'll need to go through the whole process because it wasn't covered by Medicare originally. And I think that's, you know, something that, you know, people need to understand a little bit as well.
Hawken, you're the journalist on the call. You're always very naturally inquisitive too. So, and as an end user, what Jim say makes sense to you, or like, you know, how can we get some more clarity behind that?
Yeah, I think I see what they're trying to do is they're trying to make it a little bit more straightforward, that you don't have to wait so long, go through a whole process. Because I was, you know, very curious about, okay, well, you don't necessarily need an in-person visit, but you can still opt to do that. And then I guess my question would be, is that still going to be as easily covered if you need like another evaluation 5 years, even if that isn't necessarily required for a new piece of equipment?
Well, the thing is, it's still best practice, you know, to make sure that people are, you know, because I mean, granted, if somebody has MS or CP or, you know, whatever it is, I mean, over the course of 5 years, I mean, there's some dramatic changes that take place. And if somebody doesn't take into account for those changes, you're going to end up in the same chair that you've been in for the last 5 years. And that's, you know, taking away advancements in technology or maybe some new features that, you know, would be super beneficial to you. And if you bypass the evaluation, you may not realize the advantages of getting those pieces of equipment. So, I mean, you're right, Hawken. You know, part of it is about timeliness. I mean, as you know, not just in replacement chairs, but with repairs and things like that. I mean, there's a lot of push to try and cut down the timelines for y'all to get taken care of and get the things you need when you need it. And I think that, you know, in the broader world, I don't think people really appreciate what it means when you have to wait 3 weeks to get a new chair, or you need to wait however long for somebody to come out and fix your chair if it's broken down. You know, so a lot of what Medicare is doing these days, I think, really is geared towards timeliness and making sure that you guys get what you need when you need it, instead of, you know, what it's been like over the last few years.
Yeah, I think Angie reading that HME News article last night and seeing the CTF take on it, you know, I'm curious, Tamara, you know, what maybe the drawbacks are. Something I thought was interesting is you all had mentioned, you know, technology, but then 5 years, there's so many different things that maybe an end user might not be aware about. So maybe you could speak to that and maybe the downside there.
Oh, yeah. You know, there are so many, there can be so many developments in 5 years. People are inventing and developing and modifying things all the time. And when you look at things like the HCPCS code sets, you can have several items that might fit under the same code, but it doesn't mean that they are all identical. You know, they'll fit into that general category, but there will be differences in materials or how they're put together. I mean, and they can be crucial differences in the design, materials, whatever, that will make a big difference for the end user. And so if you're just saying, oh, we can just duplicate those code sets, how do you know that you're really getting the thing within that code set that is going to be the best thing for that individual? You know, a really gross example would be, you know, coding that is the same for a foot strap and a shoe holder. Those are two really, really different things, and they work really differently. And an ankle hugger, say, those are really different items, and you can't just use them interchangeably for any old person. You know, you want to know what's really going to be the best for you as an individual. And I think that that's something that can be sussed out in an evaluation. And of course, I mean, I personally am glad to see the requirement for another face-to-face gone. Because I think that was a time-consuming thing that, at least in my experience in Montana, was often difficult to get right. I worked in a context where it wasn't a wheelchair clinic where you had one or two or three doctors who were involved all the time, and they knew what a face-to-face should look like, and they made sure that it was done right. I remember doing so much hand-holding, you know, with different physicians for different clients who had a hard time getting the face-to-face rights. I mean, sometimes I'd have to go back, you know, two or one time, even three times to say, I'm sorry, you know, this isn't clear enough. This doesn't meet the criteria of what it has to be. And so I think getting rid of that hurdle is really helpful. And I think that in terms of saving time and saving paperwork, I would see that a clinical evaluation for replacement equipment might not need to be as long. The equipment might not be, or the paperwork might not need to be as involved, but it's a time to have a conversation, I would think. And if I were doing it as a clinician, it would be, you know, so how have things been going? You know, what is your life like these days? Are you living in the same place? You know, do you have any new goals? You know, tell me what you, I used to say, tell me what you loved about this chair and tell me what you've hated and you want, what you want to be different. You know, so it could be very much a dialogue to try and make sure that whatever a person has is going to be the right thing. And I think we need to remember also that the person doing the replacement equipment may not be the same person, whether it's the ATP supplier or the therapist, may be totally different people doing that replacement equipment. And I just have to say, I'm sad and I'm sorry to say, but in my experience, I've had people come to me with chairs that were done by somebody who wasn't really at the top of their game, you know, who provided something that was less than optimal, sometimes even less than good. And if we had just gone ahead and duplicated that same chair, we would have been doing that person a disservice. You know, a person came to see me who was in a, say, a K4 manual wheelchair, and he very much badly needed tilt and space, you know, and he very much needed custom seating. Well, if you're going to say that you can just duplicate what they got last time, that person is not going to be have their needs met well. So I think I don't see this as a hierarchical thing of a therapist telling the user what they can have so much as having a dialogue and making sure that it's that as times are changing for that person, physically, mentally, environmentally, whatever, that the equipment can keep pace with them as well and keep on meeting their needs.
Yeah, I think about that when, I mean, recommend you go to the doctor every, you know, on an annual basis. And I think about the different, you know, things that change. And I'll be honest, you know, my mom's not listening probably, but I didn't listen to her advice to go to an annual physical probably until I hit my 30s. And I was like, oh yeah, I probably should be going and going consistently and, you know, making sure everything was checked up on. And, you know, I look at that a lot of times with folks and, you know, changes in posture, changes in their environment, like you were saying, Tamara, just so much can change in 5 years. I mean, I look at where I was 5 years ago today, and it's so different. Even like my physical presentation is different, you know, as we age, you know, change, people can, weight can fluctuate up or down depending on what's going on. And it's just super important to really check in and have that conversation. That was, I think it's Craig Hospital that offers annual visits for their more complex clients, and they look at their seating positioning on an annual basis. I remember our mutual friend Jenny Siegel tell me about that, Tamara. Like, you go back there annually. And I think that's, it's super important. I know some of my friends who are extremely active and they're extremely independent are like, I don't have time to go back every year. But it's at the same time, it's like, it's also for your health. But one question that came up recently that I noticed, I think it was on a webinar, Hawken, that one of the questions that may have come in last night, and I think you may have been alluding to it a little bit when we were talking with Tamara with your question. But Tamara, as far as funding for the or payment for an actual evaluation with you. So back when, you know, if you were practicing at a clinic, Tamara, and Hawken was like, hey, I need for a wheelchair evaluation. How is that funded? Did anything change with would he be able to go in with his insurance and get paid for an evaluation with you?
Yeah, that's, I picked up on that when Hawken asked that question. I think I heard it a little differently than Jim did. And what I thought Hawken was asking is, will there still be funding for me to have a specialty evaluation for my replacement chair? Yeah, there's no change to that. I don't think you would need to worry about that. But, and skipping back, you just said, Angie, the idea of the regular checks. In my private practice in Montana, I used to get together with people once a year, and with the children, we would get together every 6 months. And I had a few families when kids were going through growth spurts, they would actually say, can we get together every 3 months instead of every 6 months? Because they felt like things were changing with their kids fast, you know, and they needed to be looked at. And I think the reality is that even for adults who feel like they know their body really well, somebody looking at you from the outside can see things that we can't necessarily see about ourselves. I've worked with people who over time have gradually developed a lean to the side, you know, like I'm going. And I remember specifically a couple of them where I would help them be more erect. And I would say, well, now you're sitting upright. Now you're centered. And they'd say, no, now I'm leaning. Because they had become so used to listening to one side that they thought this was being centered. And without somebody externally to give them a frame of reference, they didn't realize that change had happened. So having someone, an outsider, you know, it's like having a personal trainer, which I just started doing, you know, who can say, no, you're not at 90 degrees. You know, you need to do this differently. It really helps to have someone, an objective person from the outside, look at things with you.
There are things that people, I know that unless you've worked in a hospital or been a therapist, have you ever heard the term CPT code?
No.
That's a procedure code. And so when Tamara's doing billing, that's what she bills under for the time of her service as an occupational therapist. And there are specific codes for wheelchair evaluations, for occupational therapy sessions, physical therapy sessions. And so that's really where the funding for that comes from. So it's different than the HCPCS codes, which is what Jim was referring to for the specific pieces of equipment. And typically, if you're able to get a physical therapy evaluation, so or a session, or you know those codes, that the clinicians that you work with on an outpatient basis or inpatient basis will know which code that will fall under. And they're usually funded pretty regularly, like any other. If you were to go for an OT visit to address, you know, some other things related to your ADLs.
Yeah, I think from an end user perspective, you know, it's important to know what you are able to do, because I think a lot of times people will try to just get you through quickly. Because I understand, like, you know, everyone has to make money and they have to get a certain amount of people through. But I think it's good to stop and be like, oh, I should have this. Like, can we make sure we, you know, get a MAT evaluation, occupational therapy evaluation before you move on, because then you're kind of stuck with what you have for 5 years in most cases.
Yeah. And I think you're hitting on something really important there, Hawken, is that without the evaluation, the most important perspective in this entire process is bypassed if we don't have you as a consumer come in and talk to us and, you know, let us know how things are going and what you would like to see differently, or maybe some challenges that you'd like to address. Without that evaluation, you end up plugged into the same exact situation that you've been in for the last 5 years without an opportunity to express your needs and concerns. So, I mean, that's another piece of it that, you know, makes this evaluation that much more important. And as a consumer out there, I mean, you have the right to request an evaluation as well. I mean, you know, after you're listening to this podcast today, I mean, if you get into a situation where you're trying to get a new chair and somebody's trying to bypass an evaluation, you have every right to request an evaluation so that you can make sure that your needs are satisfactorily met. Because the last thing you want to do is be stuck for another 5 years in a chair that you can't do anything about because somebody smashed the easy button, right?
Mm-hmm. And really, a lot of what we talk about is advocacy, advocating for yourself, you know, from the end user perspective. And there's honestly a red flag. If we talk about this all the time on the podcast, and we talk to people individually, if a wheelchair provider or a therapist is saying, don't include somebody else, or don't look at this brand, or this is the only one that's paid for. And I've even said this, gone on record, I'll do it, you know, all day long, and a Permobil will support it. If someone's only ever showing you a Permobil chair as a provider and saying that this is the only one code and nothing else is paid for, that's a massive red flag. Because even within our own portfolios, there's different things besides the F5 VS that you're sitting in right now, Hawken. There's different, and if someone is like, oh, no, you don't need to call Tamara, Hawken, we'll just go ahead and just write this on up for you, that's a red flag. And you can very politely, and I know it's awkward. It is. It's awkward to break up with an ATP, a clinician, a doctor. I mean, if you're like me, I hate like I hate when I run into a hairstylist that I don't see anymore. And she's like, oh, I haven't seen you in a while. It's like, oh no, you said that like awkward moment, right? You don't want to be that person, but at the same time, this is not a haircut. This is your overall health. So anyway, do we see any other, I mean, as far as, you know, questions related to this topic, I think that, I don't know if there's any more on this one, except for continue business as usual, as far as I'm concerned, like continue to get the evaluation process. I don't see it. I wouldn't recommend anything but change, Tamara. Would you recommend anything changing?
We're just trying to really get the word out. I really appreciate you having this episode on this topic. Last Friday, I spoke with Liz at HME News, and she's going to be doing a follow-up story. Monday, I spoke with Lori Watanabe. She's going to be doing a follow-up story as well. As Jim knows, we've sent our formal letter to David Schwartz at CMS. And, you know, to a bunch of the other players, Resna, Einards, NCARD. I know the Resna Professional Standards Board was quite concerned about this, and they're liaising with us about this. So we're just trying to really get the word out. I don't know if it will be possible to have any sort of clarifying language could be added in terms of recommending the specialty evaluation. I'm not going to hold my breath that even if it could happen, it's going to happen anytime soon. So I think the most important thing is to get the word out to users and suppliers and clinicians, just try and spread it far and wide. I would say the advantages of a clinical evaluation, it's not just a hoop that somebody is forcing you to jump through. There are some really good reasons behind it, and it's an opportunity to be collaborative and be part of the team process, which the literature shows us provides the best results for end users, is if you have a team approach. So we're just trying to spread the word, and I'm really grateful that Wheelchair Nerds is helping do that.
Absolutely. It's something we're extremely passionate about, and anytime I run into friends who use wheelchairs, even that are in the industry, you know, someone who's in a wheelchair that works for a provider, works for a manufacturer, I'll say, hey, when was the last time and kind of being tongue in cheek here, I'll say, when was the last time an OT or PT had their hands on you in an appropriate way to really do a really good evaluation on you? Because I think it's really important. And very good friends of ours who have, you know, a spouse that's an ATP or a spouse that's an OT, they'll say, you know, like, yeah, no, it's important. Like, I won't do my husband's equipment. He needs to take himself to a clinic, and he needs to get those recommendations from somebody else. And I think it's just important. And if those if people who are working in the industry know the importance of it, really making sure best practice happens for everyone is definitely a passion of ours, for sure. If everyone's okay, I would love to transition. We've got a couple more minutes to. I know some other things have been happening in the world of funding. Jim, you really wanted to take a sabbatical this year, but you've been action packed lately with announcements between you and McKay from our government relations team. But something recently came about and people got really excited about it, and it was change of diagnosis. Can you, you know, for those of us who are picking up on that randomly, I even got it wrong, Jim. I was like, hey, I saw something and I got it wrong.
Last week, CMS came out and announced that seating and positioning products are no longer diagnosis driven from a coverage perspective. You know, Tamara alluded earlier that her and I had a brief conversation before we got recording here today, talking about that a little bit. And, you know, it's changed. I mean, this has been diagnosis driven for 20 years. So, I mean, it's something that some people have never known it any different. Right. And so to see the diagnosis codes be removed from the coverage guidelines, it's a little concerning because, well, what does that mean? What do I do now? If they don't have, you know, if we don't have a code to go by, how are we going to get paid? Well, the thing that's interesting about the seating positioning policy is that even though it's been diagnosis driven for a long period of time, you know, there were still some clinical, you know, notes that needed to be identified in the chart note. I mean, you know, like for skin protection, you know, can you do your own functional weight shift? Do you have, you know, past or current pressure ulcers, or you know, absent sensation in the area that you contact with your seating system? I mean, those are things that have always needed to be addressed, but the diagnosis code kind of came in and allowed maybe people to not document that stuff quite as well as maybe they should. So now it's going to put the onus of making sure that those needs are satisfied, you know, through documentation in the chart note. But other than that, I mean, it's business as usual. I mean, the codes are still the same. The coverage is still the same, minus the ICD-10s. Reimbursement rates are still the same. But because it's change, I mean, there's, you know, there's some concerns and people trying to wrap their hands around it and make sure that they know what they're doing going forward. So I think in the grand scheme of it's going to be great, because, you know, there's been, can't tell you how many people over the years that I've been doing this where people have ended up having to get into lesser equipment because they didn't have the specific enough diagnosis code to get what they really needed. And so this will take that challenge out of the equation. I think over time, people will appreciate this and they'll embrace it, and it'll be a good thing.
For sure. So Tamara, I know you haven't had much time to make an official CTF statement on this, but as an OT, with a veteran OT, you know, what are your thoughts on this change?
Well, I think it's a breath of fresh air. I think it was a wonderful but really surprising change. Yes. I never expected to see this. I was telling Jim earlier, one of the projects I was involved in through CTF in 4 years ago, was a phone call with the medical directors where we were discussing this very thing. And we asked them to add some diagnosis codes because we were giving examples of people we worked with who were denied for things they needed, because they didn't fit into that tidy box of an ICD-10 diagnosis code. And so we gave them a list of codes that we felt would be helpful if they would add these codes that would help us get the seating that our people needed. And we did succeed in getting them to add a few, but they didn't even add all of the codes that we asked for. And we thought that was a win. We would never even have dreamed of asking them to wipe the slate clean and take off the diagnosis. We thought it was a win to get them to add 4 or 5. So this was a really big surprise. I think, again, it puts a spotlight on the importance of a clinical evaluation, because you really need to do a good job of describing a person's presentation and function in order to justify the seating products that you're recommending. You can't just hang your hat on a code and say, well, you know, we know what that code means. You're going to have to really describe it for that individual, unique person. So I see it as a good thing, but something that's going to maybe demand a little bit more of people, both clinicians and suppliers.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Hawk, why don't you wrap us up for this recording?
Yeah, this is really informative, you know, for me as an end user, and I'm sure many others. And, you know, unfortunately, the 5-year change seems to have some limitations, but kind of ending on a positive note with the ICD-10 codes kind of being wiped clean. So I think now for, you know, the clinician task force, for example, you have even more education to do to ensure that, you know, people are documenting everything that needs to be documented. And then from the patient side, just to be able to advocate for yourself what you need and ask for the things that you need so that you can have a good, like, 5-year life with whatever your equipment is. So, yeah, this is very informative. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And see you next time. Thanks, Tamara and Jim.
Yeah, for sure. And stay tuned to advocate for more too within the Permobile world. I'm sure Jim will be giving us some updates to our website, Advocate. Stay tuned, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @WheelchairNerds. And tell your friends about our podcast too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobile.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you. With the wheelchair nerds, the wheelchair nerds, the wheelchair nerds. And I say-